You are listening to the GeoNiagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.
Welcome to episode 2 of the GeoNiagara Radio Show. I'm RJ, and here's Darren with me as always.
Hello, everyone.
We'd like to thank everyone who listened to our first episode. It has been downloaded almost 800 times, which is absolutely huge. I think it's just blowing our minds here a little bit.
Yeah, we're like absolutely ecstatic that so many people have given a listen to the episode. And again, we'd like to thank Dr. Fullerton for coming in for that interview. Today, we are extremely excited to have Dr. Charles F. Gritzner coming on the air for an interview. He's the author of the essay, What Is Where, Why There, and Why Care? So if you tune into our first episode, you'll know that I read excerpts from that essay to basically set up the premise of the radio show. And we're really excited about having Dr. Gritzner in. We also have the GeoNiagara Radio Show Facebook page up now. And you just search on Facebook, GeoNiagara Radio Show, and it should pop up. Give us a like, and we'll provide links to the show and some show notes that you can access.
It's an easy way to get in contact with us. You can submit questions for our Ask a Geographer segment. You could ask us any questions, or if there's something you'd like to see on the show, we'd be more than happy to hear your feedback.
If you have topics to see discussed, or hear discussed, I guess would be the better term for it, then absolutely that would be the best place to look. And as always, through Twitter, you can contact us at GeoNiagara. And we look forward to hearing your questions and your comments and ideas.
Joining us on the phone from Brookings, South Dakota, Dr. Charles F. Gritzner, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Geography at South Dakota State University. He is also the author of the essay we read a snippet of last week, What Is Where, Why There, and Why Care? Dr. Charles F. Gritzner has the most awe-inspiring CV we have ever seen. He has 33 publications appearing in books, 17 chapters appearing in edited books, 128 refereed works, 89 papers presented at conferences going back to 1958. He has been an advisor to 67 master's students and 2 PhD candidates. He has taught at 73 different courses at the undergraduate and graduate levels. He has served on numerous U.S. national review panels, and he is the recipient of at least 25 university, state, and national awards. Please welcome Dr. Charles F. Gritzner.
So good evening, Dr. Gritzner. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on our show. You continue to have an incredible career in geography. I mean, we've looked through your CV and it's absolutely astounding. Could you share with us your journey in becoming a geographer?
Certainly, Darren. First, I want to thank you so much for making this opportunity possible. It's wonderful talking with you and your audience listeners there in Canada. Well, in some respects, it was a long and convoluted trip, and in other ways, it wasn't. I think I'm probably unique in having known every single day of my life since I was in the fourth grade what I wanted to be when I grew up. First a coach, and then suddenly a geographer with no change in between. I started out back in 1954 as a phys ed major at Arizona State, and as a ed major, I had to take a geography class. So I walked in there, and this pompous little prof walked in and said, "This will be the most interesting course you'll take during your entire entire years here at Arizona State." I said to myself, "You know, sure, prof." Anyway, after his first lecture, I walked out knowing darn good and well that I wanted to be a geographer and switched majors. Basically, I guess what I did was realize I'd been a geographer all my life. I just didn't know there was such a thing. I don't think I'd ever even heard the word geography or geographer, other than National Geographic magazine.
Your story is not exactly foreign to us because we've heard that many times at the university. And in the last episode, Dr. Fullerton made mention of a study that they did, and basically 2/3 of the entire graduating classes came in from different majors.
When I entered, the word on the street was that 99% of all geography majors came from some other discipline. You know, geography was not really taught in the schools. In fact, in 1984, I lobbied to get geography required for high school graduation here in South Dakota, and we became the first state to mandate a geography course. So, most students simply didn't know that geography existed. Yeah, in terms of the trip, I think there are several things that all of us share who become geographers. We have a curiosity about places and a love affair with maps and a wanderlust. We love to travel and so on. And when I look back upon my childhood, I certainly was very curious about places. Now, I don't even remember this, but my mother said that as a kid, maybe 4 or 5 years old, we had an aunt who lived next door and who had a subscription to National Geographic magazine. And I would take my little stuffed animal, Boo Boo, and we would travel in some magic way, air, rail, boat, ship, or whatever, and go to various places in the world with National Geographics on my lap. And just imagining that we were traveling to those places that National Geographic showed. And then during the Second World War, we lived on a farm out of Fremont, Michigan, in the western part of the state, north of Grand Rapids. And I remember drawing maps of the farm, and this would have been maybe 8 years old, 9 years old, something like that. And in fact, before she passed away in the 1990s, my mother showed me 4 or 5 maps that I'd drawn as a youngster. So again, the love affair with map, and then, of course, the love of travel. And having grown up there in the 40s, Second World War and so on, our travel was quite limited. But in 49, we moved to Arizona. And I'll never forget the thrill of traveling from western Michigan to Arizona and seeing the landscapes and changes in topography and weather conditions and vegetation and economic activity and so on. And so long before I knew there was a geography, I was really thinking like one. So I think it was the beginning of my junior year. I transferred to geography and graduate school at Louisiana State University, and the rest pretty much history. I'm very fortunate to have had an active teaching career that spanned a half century, 50 years.
That's absolutely incredible. At the opening of episode 1 of our show, I read an excerpt of your essay, What is Where, Why There, and Why Care, basically to paint a picture of what we hope to accomplish with the GeoNiagara Radio Show in terms of educating the broader public about the importance and relevance of geography to our everyday lives. Could you tell us a little bit about how this essay came to be?
Ooh, this is a long story, but I'll try to come up with a short version, Darren. Throughout my own career, up until I came up with the What is Where, Why There, and Why Care, my own definition of geography was kind of vague. It changed from time to time. I remember I started out human adaptation to the natural environment, which was hardcore environmental determinism. The LSU, it was the science of Earth's surface, which is pretty daggum vague if you think about it, and so on. And again, throughout most of my career, I was really confused in regard to the nature of geography and the full realization that geographers themselves were confused. I had a colleague who should remain unnamed who I asked, well, how do you define geography to your graduate students? He said, I don't believe it can be defined. Well, this guy had 3 degrees in geography and couldn't define the discipline, and that is so typical of what's happening out there. Over the years, I collected definitions of geography and came up with well over 100 of them. And, you know, those of your listeners who are familiar with geography know that in times past, it's been ecology, the old earth and man relationship that was prevalent during the early part of the 20th century. And then, 1925, Carl Sauer, study of landscape and study of places or regions and so on. Geography is earth science. But there's one thing shared in common by all of these definitions, and that is that each of them focused upon a single tangible element. That is, they were content-based. The geographers were studying something. Now, a quick quantum leap here in thought. In the late 1980s, a good friend of mine who was active in the National Council for Social Studies was responsible for creating what I'll call a dog and pony show between Lake Paul Gagnon, probably the nation's foremost history educator, and myself and various people involved in the teaching of civics. And what we were going to do within the context of the National Council for Social Studies is show that, well, if you knew geography and you knew history, you'd be a good citizen, hence, you know, the civics aspect. Well, we started out in Anaheim, and we had a large audience, several hundred people who I assumed to be the leading social studies educators in the country. And Paul Gagnon, who was a brilliant speaker, got up and said, well, you all know what history is, and you all know why history's important, don't you? And man, I mean, he had hundreds of heads bobbing up and down. Well, I followed. I said, well, you all know what geography is and why geography is important, don't you? And I mean, looking out there at hundreds of toast blank face stares. They did not have a clue, and I really worried about this. I thought about it at great length, probably over a period of a year. And fortunately, I taught evolution and geographic thought throughout much of my career. And I was aware that back around 1800, Immanuel Kant, the German philosopher and geographer, said that history and geography are unique, that they're both methodologies that can study anything. And I thought about that and said, gee whiz, you know, if I can play off history, which everybody thinks they know about, thinks they understand, I can show them what history is and then what geography is. So history, the temporal methodology, geography, spatial, history when, geography where. And I came up with a definition of geography, what is where, why there, and why care. And to parallel that, came up with history as a study of what happened when, why then, and toward what end. And probably did, 20 or 30 workshops framing my definition, and it made perfectly good sense to the teachers. They loved it. They ran with it. So, again, basically just trying to simplify things a little bit.
The essay was written, if I'm not mistaken, around 2002. At the time, did you imagine that it would have such an impact on the discipline of geography? I mean, they're using it in faculties of education, I'm assuming across North America, if not in faculties around the world.
Well, in answer to your question, absolutely not. I was shocked, but very pleasantly so, I must admit. My whole motive was simply to try to explain geography in a way that everyone could understand. I think it's imperative that geographers, you know, particularly those of us who teach and who become geographers, are on the same page. We agree upon the nature of the discipline, and certainly we do not. I remember there was an article years ago in the Chronicle for Higher Education that geography conveys a very fuzzy image, and you bet we do. It's just unbelievable how few people. Somebody about 20 years ago interviewed 100 people on the street someplace and found that only two or three of them could give a coherent definition of geography. And that is atrocious. I mean, you talk about history or economics or sociology or geology, you know what it is. The public knows what it is. But again, if only two or three people out of 100 know what geography is, we've got a huge, huge problem. So, interestingly enough, not everybody likes my definition. Soon after it was published, I got a call from a pre-grade 12 youngster in Toronto. And he said, hey, my teacher doesn't like your definition of geography, but I do. What can I tell my teacher to get to like it? And I have no idea what my response was, but I thought that was kind of interesting that I got a call from a youngster in Toronto wanting support for my definition. But anyway, it is catching on, amazingly so. I see it in so many places. I'm extremely grateful to have had the opportunity to hopefully promote geography and geographic education in a meaningful way that people can understand.
So in an essay that you wrote titled Geography, 5th Century B.C. to Early 21st Century A.D., R.I.P., one can sense your frustration about the evolution of the discipline and the challenges of cohesively defining it. You reference an article that you co-published in 1963 titled Let's Sell Geography, and under the subheading, Have We Sold Geography? So in your opinion, 54 years removed from that original article, have we sold geography? And if we haven't, what can we do differently?
Oh my. Well, first, I believe that we failed dismally to sell geography. I don't believe much of the public knows anything more about geography today than they did 50 or 60 years ago when I first became involved. And today, of course, the world is an infinitely more complex place. I mean, there are problems anywhere. We can sit in the comfort of our own homes and watch atrocities occurring live, half a world away, and so on. And it's a disgrace that Americans in particular don't know more about geography. So, again, I guess we failed in terms of trying to tell geography. In fact, I think that in the past half century, probably the single greatest development that advanced geography in terms both of public awareness, relevance, its application, and so forth, has been GIS, Geographic Information Systems, in which you were involved. The key there, of course, is that GIS is used by practitioners of many different academic fields, but it has the magic word geography or geographical in it. So this has got people's attention. At least they know there's a technique out there that is geographical. In the article to which you referred, Darren, I think there are maybe three or four different points that I could raise. One is that we need to focus more on the foundations of geography, its nature, history, evolution, leading contributors and their literature and so forth, research techniques like a field course and so forth. We don't do that. When I was a graduate student at LSU, I had 5 different courses, if I recall correctly, that focused on foundations: evolution geographic thought, 20th century American geography, geography of exploration, geographic literature, and field geography. Within a year or two, all of those courses were out of the curriculum and collapsed into one undergraduate lecture course. So I had to fight tooth and nail to get evolution geographic thought accepted in the curriculum. And so again, you know, we're losing track of what we are. We're not teaching it. And when you're not teaching these elements, you end up with people with 3 degrees in geography who say, well, I don't know what the definition is. It can't be defined. Secondly, the public doesn't really know who we are and what we do as geographers, which is one of the neat aspects, I think, of my definition, that it's very simple for the public to understand and apply. Third, geographers need to capitalize on our strengths. What does the public really expect from us, and are we delivering that? And, I find it so amazing, Darren, that anything and everything on Earth's surface is fair game for geographic research, because, again, geography is a methodology, a way of organizing and analyzing information. But how have we used this to our advantage? I don't think we have. I think that we've totally ignored the innate interest people have in learning about the world out there. So I guess you could say that maybe in terms of geography's greatest strength and greatest weakness, it would both be defined by its diversity. The fact that we can study anything and make it geographical, but also because we study anything and everything, people simply don't understand what it is that we do. That when the public thinks about geography, what on earth is it that serves as a common thread that links someone studying, say, landforms, climate change and its impact, a focus on contemporary social issues, analyzing the spread of a disease in Africa, political turmoil in the Middle East, or something like that? Well, again, geography is not based on what we study, it's based on how we study it. So the common thread there would be the spatial approach, the what is where and why there.
And why care.
Yeah, and why care. That's right.
That really leads me to the next question. In early January of 2014, I had seen a tweet from a gentleman by the name of Jimmy Cassis. Currently, he's a senior fellow for the International Center for Leadership and Education in Rexford, New York. The tweet read, "Don't ask a student what they want to be when they grow up. Ask them what problem they want to solve." And I thought this was a really poignant point, because as many of the world's problems do have a spatial component to them, what do you think of this statement as it relates to geography and geographic education, especially in promoting careers in geography?
Mm-hmm. That is an excellent question. As a geographer, I want to better understand, I guess, the diversity, the problems of Earth, features, their interactions, conditions, distributions, patterns, regions, et cetera, all the geo buzzwords, so to speak. And in regard to my definition and how they relate, I mean, think about it, it's not going to try to memorize all this. The elements would be the what, whatever it is you're studying after, the features, interactions, conditions, distributions, and so on. Their distribution would be the where and how they came to be why there, and the importance or relevance would be the why care. So the problem of understanding Earth's diversity, which of course is totally open-ended, and so it's not a specific answer necessarily, but again, if someone were to ask me what problem do I want to solve, it would be what I devoted much of my career to, that is trying to better understand the diversity of conditions on Earth's surface.
Finally, we've asked this question to our first guest, Dr. Fullerton, in our last episode, and we thought we'd ask it of you as well. What is one aspect of geography that you could share with us that you would think would just blow someone's mind who had never even thought of it before?
Oh, that's a great question, Darren. Let me give you 2 answers. As we mentioned, the first time we spoke a week or so ago, I was absolutely shocked to find that when we here in the United States think of Canada, you guys are up there. And yet we live about 10 miles north of Brookings, and so you are 80 miles south of us. So I would ask you, well, hey, how's the weather down there? I think that would shock most people. It's several hundred miles to the Canadian border from Brookings. And, you know, you have to go through half of South Dakota and all of North Dakota to get there. And yet more than half of Canada's population lives south of Brookings. And I don't think either Canadians or Americans really think in those terms. I think that most people would be surprised to learn that geography is a methodology that can be applied to anything out there, anything and everything, that it can be interesting and it can be highly relevant and it can be even mind-boggling in many respects or exciting. And, you know, when most people think of geography, I think it conjures up really a bad memory, a sterile exercise and rote memorization. Oh, turned out for them to be nothing but a load on the memory rather than a light in the mind. Study of states and capitals and highest mountains and longest rivers and three leading products and then moving on to the next country. Very early in my career, I think it was probably back in the old mid-1960s, I was in a used bookstore somewhere and saw a book by a fellow, Monroe Leaf, and it was entitled Geography Can Be Fun. And it was a book for high school kids, I think, but I always remembered the title, Geography Can Be Fun. And during my career, I taught over 70 different topics, including such far-out topics, perhaps, as geomythography and geography of the future and geography of conflict and geography of the paranormal. And I always believe that you can teach hardcore geography to students, the geographic methods and techniques and so on, and being just as true to the core as you are with a traditional geography course by applying it to topics that the students would find interesting. So that geography can be fun, I think, is something that would surprise most people.
Thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Gritzner. We really appreciate you coming on the show. It intrigues me with the geography of the paranormal. Perhaps we'll have to get you back on the air for a Halloween episode, and we can discuss that a little bit further. And the geomythography seems very interesting as well. Thank you again, and we really appreciate
you. Darren, it's been a real pleasure talking with you and sharing some of my thoughts on geography and so on. And good luck with your program. I think that's absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thinking of pursuing a career in the field of geography or tourism? The Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University offers 3 and 4 year bachelor's degrees and a geography graduate program, each with several study options. At Brock University, you'll get an excellent education with hands-on experience through internships, study abroad programs, co-op, labs, seminars, and more. Explore the world through your studies. Come to Brock and experience the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies today. Check us out at brocku.ca/geotour.
So we'd like to thank Dr. Gritzner for coming on episode 2 of the Geo Niagara Radio Show. Absolutely inspiring gentleman to talk to. I can't believe that he's in his 80s. The passion that he shows when he's talking about the discipline of geography is just amazing. RJ, is there anything that stuck out in your mind that was sort of mind-boggling to you?
Yeah, I would love to learn more about that evolution of geographic thought. That's a topic I've never even considered and I think would be extremely interesting to learn about.
I think we're going to need to maybe do a little bit of Google research on that and maybe find somebody to come on the show for an interview about that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Otherwise, I'm just going to have to read another book.
Anyway, the next episode of the Geo Niagara Radio Show will be airing on Wednesday, March the 15th at 6 p.m., and other upcoming events that are happening throughout the world. Saturday, March the 4th is Open Data Day. Tuesday, March the 21st is International Day of Forests. Followed by the 22nd of March, Wednesday, that is World Water Day. And then on the 23rd of March is World Meteorological Day. And as always, every year, Earth Hour is on Saturday, March the 25th this year.
Awesome. We'd like to remind everybody to follow us on Twitter at Geo Niagara and like and follow our Facebook page at Geo Niagara Radio.
And a reminder, if you have any questions that you want to send along for an Ask a Geographer segment, you can send those along through Twitter or through the Facebook page. And while we're at it, I had recently talked to Fritz, who Dr. Gritzner is now to me. We're on a that name basis. He's open to coming on again and doing a little segment for us that we ended up calling Fritz's Latin Long. So look forward to that in the upcoming episodes. Not exactly sure when that's going to start, but it's in the works.
Well, new and exciting things are happening here at the Geo Niagara Radio Show, as always. We'd like to thank you all for listening.
Thank you for coming out.
B Be sure to tune in Wednesday, March 15th at 6 p.m. right here on CFPU 103.7 FM.
You have been listening to the Geo Niagara Radio Show, sponsored by the Department of Geography and Tourism Studies at Brock University.